Right, this is the Cool Shit Podcast. Each week, we round up the latest cool shit, helping us think different and keep inspired. What makes it in, what gets left out, and what gets challenged. Is it cool? Is it shit? Or does it cross the magic threshold and come bona fide, certified cool shit? Welcome to the editor's meeting. Okay, so the Cool Shit Podcast, episode 10. That's quite a milestone. And very excited about this one because it's a heavy hitters episode.
Thank you.
So we have the founders of Zach today. We have Matt. How are you going, Matt?
Yeah, I'm good. All good.
Good, good. And for the first time, we've got Joe. How are you going, Joe?
Hello. I'm good. I'm really good, thank you.
Okay.
Honoured to be finally invited.
We had to get the house in order before we invited you.
We've just learned how to use the mic.
You've literally had everyone about five times and I haven't had one invite yet. But yes, okay, I'm here now. Thank you.
And James, how are you? The chief editor of Cool Shit. How are you going?
Yeah, I'm all right. I'm feeling a bit more pressure today than usual.
I'm feeling the pressure too, aren't you? Yeah.
Yeah, we should have sat them next to each other, literally looking at the two of us as well.
So how has it been scrounging around for Cool Shit this week? Have you had a good time? Has it been easy? Has there been a good amount of stories out there, or are we lacking this today?
Yeah, it's been all right. Again, I always make it sound boring when we describe it, but some of them are quite kind of sciencey, but in a kind of creative way. So yeah, it's been all right.
Another science one. Another science heavy week.
Yeah,
is it?
This is James's science hour.
Brilliant. I'm tuned in. I'm ready. Okay, go on then. Start us off. What have you got?
OpenAI have created a new version of DALL-E, which is, I think, a clever combination of DALL-E and WALL-E, and that's their text to image generation program. And what that basically means is that you can type in a description of an image that you'd like to see, and like magic, the program creates it.
I'd like to say that the article, I won't say who the article is written by, but it was so hard to understand. For all you clever people out there, I'm sure it was super easy. But as a dyslexic, I had to read it about seven times to kind of get my head around it. But I think I'm there.
It was Addy Robertson. Shame on you, Addy.
Just explain it so to me in layman's terms. It's a generator where I can tag something. So I can say, like, I think it uses an example of an apple in the article. And then an apple will be created to be in that picture. A real picture that I have taken, which will then be enhanced with filters, and I can add something in. Is that correct?
Well, I think there's levels to it. I think at its kind of most wacky, you can basically just describe a scene and it creates it from scratch. So the top one here, which will, if this makes it into Cool Shit, which will be going in, is titled Teddy Bears Mixing Sparkling Chemicals as Mad Scientists Steampunk, and it just, well, as you can see, it just does it.
Do you want me to give you the explanation?
Yeah, go on. One that I can understand.
Yeah. DALL-E is a simple decoder-only transformer that receives both the text and the images a single stream of 1,280 tokens, 256 for the text and 1,024 for the image, and models all of them auto-regressively. The attention mask at each of its 64 self-attention layers allows each image token to attend.
Yeah, I know, Jesus Christ.
It sounds like a disclaimer for a medical product.
Yeah, I could say that faster and it could be at the end of an advert. No, but basically you tell it to draw something in text. So you enter a text into it and it spits out a picture. And the clever thing is it's obviously using just like a bazillion references to do that. And it can go backwards and forwards in time. So one of the examples was show me a picture of a phone from the 20s. And that's exactly what it did. It's absolutely
nuts.
Is it like Google on steroids?
Is it?
Yeah, I guess so. It must be using references, reference points, right?
Yeah.
But it's understanding the nuance of what you ask it to do. Like one of the tests here, a painting of a capybara sitting in a field at sunrise.
Well, who taught it steampunk? Who taught it, like, steampunk then?
The internet. I think it's got access to kind of everything on the internet. So it's able to kind of, in a second, download all of that information and then produce something with all of those reference points.
So what I couldn't get my head around, the thing that immediately came to me is surely that could be used for bad purposes. It could be used fraudulently to like go and steal a painting or to do something dark. I don't know. I just felt like that form of technology, I couldn't, perhaps it's my limited understanding, I couldn't see how that could be used for good. I could see more how it could be manipulated and used in a in a negative sense.
You, Joe, you employ a lot of creatives. Imagine if you didn't have to pay anyone and you could just have this bit.
That was my point. Coming up,
this bit of software. And you just want it. You have to do a proper brief. You just say, "Oh, just do this," and it just does it in a second.
It's another example, isn't it, of like creativity being made easier, so that we can start to create things. Less time, less labour involved in it. But now saying that, I don't think it's going to put us all out of a job yet.
So the interpretation's not there, right? And it's at the moment, it sounds like it's quite basic, but I suppose. What would be good to understand, and it wasn't clear on that article that I read about it anyway, it's not clear like what's the ultimate purpose for this form of technology, like how would it ultimately be used, because I imagine this is like iteration two and they'll go through a series of things, and I imagine it'll be...
I think with these things, it's always like you put it out there and it's how culture gets hold of it, and that's always really important for these things, how people start to use it on their own terms. And I completely agree with you. That's where I was going in my head. Like, what is the use for this?
Yeah.
Well, it's not art, right? It's not what it's generating. It's what it's capable of understanding. That's the thing. And when you have an AI system that's capable of understanding what it's being asked to do, forget what it actually produces as a piece of art. It's like...
Could be anything.
Do you want to hear a fun fact from what I read the other day? So the root of technology, techne, actually meant art in Greek, and the ancient Greeks never separated art from manufacture in their minds because they were indistinguishable to them, so they didn't need separate words.
Is that because they were artisans? They were hand-making stuff?
Probably. I imagine they weren't thinking of exactly this when they were talking about technology.
Have you guys seen Ex Machina, Alex Garland film?
It's a brilliant film.
I haven't seen it.
So you should watch that. It's all based around the Turing test, which is the test that an AI has to pass for you to not think that it's
AI,
artificial, right? That it's not a robot. This is like a massive step in that direction. Mm. If it's creating a painting of two steampunk teddy bears or whatever it is, if you were to show that to someone and go, who created that? And they didn't know anything about this. Has that passed the Turing test?
Yeah, if your first answer was an AI program, then that would be a really weird response.
It would be a weird response.
But it's limited to what it can do, right? So that's where you'd start to probably find it out after a while, if you kept on asking it things. But I agree with you, looking at the pictures that it's generated, I'm like, oh, wow, that looks legit, right?
An artist is probably limited as well. They can only do so much. I'm not sure they'd manage such a good picture of a Shiba Inu dog wearing a beret and a black turtleneck.
Can you imagine if you... if you link that technology with like 3D printing, so you started to say, I want something that can do this or can make that or can create this or has this capability, and then it has that ability to actually physically make an item.
Unfortunately, like, for all you Americans out there, we're not talking about guns. Stop making guns.
It's funny, I was genuinely thinking about
stop 3D printing guns, for Christ's sake.
I was thinking more about like tech innovations around, you know, medicine and engineering and, you know, the stuff my brother does, and he works for a tech pharma startup, and he's a mechanical engineer, and they design smart things around medicine and insulin devices and all that kind of stuff. And
it becomes the brain, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It becomes the brain that can do whatever it decides to do. And if that's just part of the brain that ends up going in a robot companion that serves us, we're getting into... What's the other film? The Will Smith film.
Weird. iRobot.
iRobot. We're in iRobot territory.
James, I feel like you're my robot companion.
Do you? Why am I a robot?
You tend to know a little bit too much that makes me suspect that you are... Maybe I have to do the Turing test on you.
He reads.
Okay, cool. All right. Well, interesting. Have you got something else, James, that you want to bring?
Of course I have, Gareth. Well, this actually... It's funny because I was having a conversation the other day about how much I love plastic, which isn't a terribly in vogue opinion.
That's a very odd thing to say.
It was. I love plastic bags. They're incredibly handy. But obviously it's not great for the environment. So a group of... God, what world we live in, that's controversial. A group of scientists at the University of Texas have created a modified enzyme that can break down plastics in days rather than centuries. So creating fresh material that can then be used for new products.
Does that make you feel better about your love for plastics now?
Well, kind of, because it no longer has to be a guilty pleasure.
Totally.
I can be a proud plastic.
I'm with you, because like when I read this, I was like, oh, thank God, someone's doing the hard work here. Because I agree with you, like plastics, and this is like crazy when you start to think of it, only really came into sort of mass production really in the 60s and 70s. And in like nearly 50 years or just over, can't do mass, we're kind of choking the world with plastics, right? But they have brought so much to our lives in it, like Sanity, Mattel toys.
Isn't it like every piece of fish that you eat and you consume
has microplastics?
They found microplastics in our bloodstream.
That's what I was going to touch on. That's so super scary, right? That we are now sort of like eating our own plastic. That's where we've got in less than like, you know, 60 years. I mean, that's crazy, right? So when I read a story like this, I'm just like, oh, thank fuck.
I think it's probably more the start of a process. Like, I think it's fairly early days, and they've just published this study and had it peer reviewed in something called Nature. But I think this is one group of researchers at a university. If this was then taken on a mass scale, then from the impression I got was that it could definitely be implemented. Because obviously you're already able to recycle plastic, but apparently each time that means you've got to then sort of burn it down and remold it, whereas this doesn't require that. So the plastic you get as recycled plastic has more kind of like structural integrity and is like the original plastic.
Well, so it's so what's it doing to the plastic? You know,
it breaks it down. So it breaks down the polymers into monomers, I guess.
Right.
And then to be used again. So it can be recrafted as if it was original plastic.
But it's not like you know, it's not gonna save us from the plastic that's already been dumped in landfill and all that kind of shit. It's not going to break that down. You know,
I don't think you can pour it in the sea and it's going to go and sort out all the
stats about how long it takes, you know, a plastic bag that's in landfill to decompose. It's not going to help that.
Yeah, no, we're screwed on that front.
We still need to recycle.
But future plastic bags.
Yeah, it just means you don't... my understanding was that you don't have to make more plastic. You just make better use of the stuff that's already out there.
All right, so good impact on the Stop Oil campaign then as well. Less oil, less new plastic. Recycle plastic.
It's a good news story, James. How do you feel about this? Are you annoyed or are you?
No, I'm delighted. Might be able to get my plastic straws back. They were great, weren't they?
Okay, I think I'm going to come on to Matt next. Do you have something to bring to the editorial meeting that could be considered for Cool Shit this week?
Of course I do.
Brilliant. You did your homework. Good.
Of course I did my homework. I'm always down with a bit of homework. Yeah. My story this week is about return of retail, right? I'm a big retail fan. There's a couple of brands out there doing it, like hyper retail. It's a thing, according to a few publications.
What's hyper retail?
So hyper retail is like, it's almost like sensory retail. So, you know, we've all gone into those shops that's made out of kind of chipboard and are all a little bit too cool for school and all the rest of it. The more sort of high fashion brands are doing like retail concepts again. And it's kind of like a little bit more transitory. So, you know, they're not a pop-up shop as such, but like a brand experience. And they're kind of giving it like a fuckload of creativity again, which is like so nice to see, rather than, you know, Spartan sort of minimalist kind of stores, which I get it, there's a place for that as well. But the one that caught my eye, Jacquemus. So like, you know, growing kind of fashion brand. Not, I wouldn't say it's high fashion, all the rest of it. But it's kind of, it's done this amazing thing in Selfridges, which again, it's not a sort of personal hangout of mine, but they've brought to life this almost like swimming pool kind of bathroom type of concept. I think it's called Le Bleu, and it's based on some hotel concept as well. But it's like you walk in and there's lockers in there, everything's blue, it's all tiled. It's just this amazing sort of retail, hyper-real sort of concept around his brand. I think you can get products there as well, but it's more about what it says about the brand. And I think, in contrast to that, I was started doing a bit of digging, obviously, as you do for this kind of stuff. And Dior spent like multi-million euros just refurbishing their flagship store in Paris. And it already looks really fucking old compared to like Jacquemus, younger brand.
You saying Jacquemus or Jacquemus?
Jacquemus.
Right.
Jacquemus. Not saying Jacquemus. It's not the Freddie Flintoff experience. Yeah. Although, James, is that where your t-shirt's from?
What, my vinyl t-shirt? Yeah.
But yeah, it's like you look at a brand like Dior, And they've done this new concept, and you can train there, you can chill out there, you can sleep there, and all the rest of it. It's like a members club slash kind of flagship store. It's dull, it's out of touch, it feels kind of a bit stuffy and a bit old. And then you look at like Jacquemus, what they're doing. I saw another one from Balenciaga doing this store, which is just like completely covered in pink fur, not real fur, obviously. And you know, there's Bottega Veneta have done this mad kind of green maze in Korea or something like that. And they're basically like trying to tempt us all back out of our bedrooms and cabins and offices and places where we've been bunkered down for the last kind of 2 years and go and actually come back and get sensory, get creative.
So what I think about that story and the point that you're highlighting is because for brands to start to rethink retail spaces is exactly what needs to happen now. So to start to get some of that brand experience, you've only got to look at restaurants that understand the power of Instagrammable backgrounds and everything, that we want to be going to places to have an experience. And I think it makes brands think harder, work harder, and doesn't have to be just the same old stores doing the same old thing, because they need to reduce the amount of stores, I think. Like, retail needs to reduce. But I'd love to see special retail or the retailers that I do go to just try it a bit harder. I think that's a good thing.
That's the point. And you said the retailers I do go to, and you said tempting us all back out of our homes. The brands that you named, it's like Balenciaga, Bottega, like are those sort of... they're definitely not tempting us all, because I've never been in any of those stores, and I imagine I won't be able to afford to for a good 30 years yet.
But that's the problem, right? We're working with an unnamed high fashion brand at the moment because... their stores are too intimidating, particularly to younger people, particularly to kind of, you know, Gen Z.
Yeah, there's a lot of, I did a bit of research on that, and they just don't want to go in. They don't feel like they feel like they get stared at.
They're not welcome. They're,
yeah,
right.
Exactly.
And,
yeah.
And that's the Dior thing. You're not
I
welcome.
I think that's
in
most
that
people. I don't think that's
but fashion brands, it's so important to have young people in there to basically being like whether they can afford things or not, they are your next generation of icons, of people that are going to keep your brand alive.
But totally. I think also, like, they're, you know, with the emergence of sort of street fashion and street culture coming into luxury fashion, for that to be authentic, you have to have younger people wearing
absolutely
it. And why would you walk through the doors if it's... there's generally security guards on the doors. They're quite often in prestigious buildings.
It's intimidating, totally. But I get it. Like, Bottega Veneta, not for you. Dior, not for you. It's not for me either, but it's the point of what they're doing with... some of their budget is putting it into creativity again, and that'll trickle down. You know, it'd be great to see like your more sort of mainstream stores. Like, I went into Westfield earlier, and it's like, it's dull, right? It's all dull. It's this sort of monument to just sort of very average kind of shopping. There's nothing in there where you kind of walk into a store and go, fuck me, this is cool. Like, there's nothing cool about mainstream middle of the road brands.
I've spent some time in the sports retail game, working in some unnamed shops, and they are very depressing environments. So it'd be better for the workers as well, actually.
Yeah,
thinking
absolutely
about it,
like somewhere where you like feel a bit engaged and prouder to sort of hang out and work in. But for me, it's more this sort of blend of like creativity going back into brand experiences at a retail level. And that'll spread out, right, from the people who are doing it now. And it's just like, it's just freshening shit up again, because it's just looking at the legacy brands, they're not doing anything interesting.
Yeah.
The only thing I would say, and just again from our experience of doing sort of similar things in the past, is those types of stores, as phenomenal and amazing as they are, their ability to shift product is significantly reduced, because so much of that space is made up as part of the experience. So they're not really there. It is brand experience. It's not really retail.
Like, I can't remember the last time I went into a trainer shop and went like, oh, I'll just have a look at some trainers and see what I like and maybe put a pair on.
You nearly did Betty's voice.
Well, I did. I nearly did do my daughter's voice. And again, like, I enjoyed trainer shopping with her, but we do it online because like you've got the choice there. So what is the reason for me to go into like a trainer store? It's to kind of get to feel it, to understand it. And it doesn't matter that I'm not buying it there or then. It's the point of like, I start to like this retailer. Yeah. I start to feel that they're bringing me something.
Do you not think though, like, retail has different purposes for different consumers? So like, when you're a teenager,
it's to hang out.
It's a safe place
and
that
shoplift.
Your parents... well, no, it is. It's a safe place that your parents would let you hang out with your mates. You could feel independent. You could like go meet some boys, go get a Mackie D's or whatever. And you could feel like... But it was more social. I think it's independence.
I 100% agree with you. And it was like a chance to just basically be out and about and meet other people a little bit like you.
Yeah, yeah. Whereas, I don't know, like now, I never go into a store. I don't understand why I would need to. I just buy it online. Where do you ever go shopping?
Told you it's a retail store.
About an hour and a half ago.
Yeah, but that was a distressed purchase.
It was a distressed purchase. You never go shopping. Because like, I'm not going to ask him
what his distressed purchase was. But like, I don't want to know. Just to save it for off air, thank you.
I don't need to, but when a store's really good, I revel in it. I love it. Like, you know, the brand that I wear all the time, they're famous for their sort of brand experiences in stores. And it's not just about plugging in a coffee shop there. It's what they do around it, you know. But in terms of your sort of query back on, are they selling product? Jacquemus has got that covered as well. Because as part of this, they've got a vending machine to buy two exclusive colourways of their, however much it is, hundreds of pounds.
So you don't have to talk to a person.
Don't even have to talk to a person.
That sounds tempting. Right. Mine isn't a cool. Mine's an anti-cool shit.
Well, no then.
Yeah. But it's interesting, and I want to talk about it.
Okay,
so
let's hear it.
I want to talk about the Met Gala, and actually, what I wanted to talk about has actually morphed into something slightly different. So, for those of you that don't know, I'm just going to read out what it is. So, the Met Gala is basically been around since the 40s, and it's a huge charitable moment, raising money for the Metropolitan Museum of Art's Costume Institute in New York. So it's this enormous thing. It's probably the pinnacle red carpet moment globally.
Yeah, so, and it supersedes the Oscars for that as well, doesn't it? Because it's more crazy. There's more creativity with the way people approach it,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. And since, I think it's the 90s, Anna Wintour has been responsible for it. She's been the chairperson of the event. And basically, every year they set a theme and then they invite people. And they invite, it's all the good and the great. So first of all, it started off where it was just like high society. And then it evolved into celebrity and actors and movie stars. And now it's...
And Elon Musk.
So they have people from business, they have... philanthropists, they have actors, pop stars,
but they didn't. Funny enough, they didn't have Will Smith this year. Did you see Will Smith turn up?
Yeah, funny
that. Yeah, weird. I don't know.
Busy. But so it's become this enormous event, but you have to get invited. You can't buy tickets, you get invited. And it's seen as
James booked his ticket for next year.
I've been saving up all week.
It's seen as a real plastic dress. It's a real privilege to be invited. And basically the theme is an opportunity for creative self-expression. So the people that get invited generally will work with a really famous fashion designer or up-and-coming talent to craft something in response to the brief.
So you've highlighted what it's about. What's your entry point to cool shit for it?
So my first thing is, if you get invited, right, do the fucking decent thing, stick to the brief. Can you imagine if we didn't stick to the brief and we went off piece, we'd get fired? Stick to the brief. I just think it's really rude to have that moment of privilege, which is ultimately a celebration for historical costume and fashion, to then wear whatever crap's in your wardrobe or something horrific. And I'm going to
You talk about Pete Davidson turning up in a pair of Vans.
I thought he looked decent.
He did look all right. He did look all right.
Is that what it ultimately is, a celebration of sort of historic fashions?
Yeah, because they've got a PR job to do then.
I never knew any of that.
Because I thought when I saw Kim Kardashian turning up in Marilyn Monroe's real dress.
I was just like, don't
do that.
So there's two parts. So initially, my beef about it, which isn't cool shit, it's a non-cool shit story, is...
That's fine.
People like Khloe Kardashian and her sister...
Kourtney. Kendall.
And actually Kylie. Let's park Kim for one moment. The other sisters, none of them stuck to the brief. They all wore just whatever the fuck they fancied. I mean, Kylie did wear a Virgil Abloh off-white creation, and obviously
And you a know. Fucking baseball.
Yeah, she had a hat on, didn't she? That was the one that I saw. It was, yeah.
Someone said on a comment on her, it's like when Gary's got 80 quid left in his Don't Tell the Bride budget.
No, but like it was, from my understanding, it might be wrong, is that she worked with Off-White on it, and it was part of, it was taken from Virgil Abloh's last collection. So you can't understand that. However, it's got fuck all relevance to the Gilded Age. Yeah.
The reason I didn't understand exactly what it was, because the people actually going probably don't recognise the sort of magnanimity of the intent behind it.
What I think that you're talking about, and this is where it's interesting, is the modern celebrity culture, yes, and how that's applying to it. That's what's a...
Yeah, and I think it's more about how celebrity seems to be more important than
fashion.
Something which is cultural and important and about celebrating design, and it's bigger than celebrity, but somehow celebrity has overtaken important things. But I just want to specifically talk about Kim Kardashian wearing Marilyn Monroe's dress. So there's been enormous backlash. So the theme was the Gilded Age, right? So you could argue that, okay, and Matt's shaking his head.
I'm not taking that. Marilyn Monroe dress is what, 50s?
Yeah. Yeah.
Gilded Age, 1870 to 1900, 1910, something like that. Age of the railroads, age of America making just enormous sums of money.
Yeah, it's just smacks itself. Of like, I want Marilyn's dress. Exactly. I want Marilyn's dress. Well, won't that be a showstopper?
The tenuous link is that it cost me $6.5 billion.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
let me tell you about this. So that dress is 60 years old. It is seen as the most expensive artifact. It's seen as a cultural moment.
Yeah, of course. It's the happy birthday Mr. President dress, isn't it?
She wore it when she sang happy birthday to JFK. So it's seen as the most culturally important piece of fashion
for Americans.
But what's yours then? Dion Dublin's boots.
Like mine is million. David Beckham's sarong.
It's crazy. Yeah, 1992, whatever. So she wore this dress. It's 60 years old. So all of the kind of art conservators are going nuts and saying it's an absolute disgrace that anyone would ever be allowed to wear.
Did they have to refit it for her? Did they have to like? Yeah. I mean, don't touch the dress.
Didn't she buy it?
She didn't buy it.
No. You can't buy it.
Someone bought it for like $6.2 million.
Yeah, but then she's loaned it from that person.
Right. So it's the most expensive dress ever sold at auction, but it's made of this really like super, super delicate fabric. It's stretchy and resilient when it's new, but it becomes weaker and more brittle with age. And it's got this really heavy beadwork. So it's he's got thousands and thousands of hand sewn beads on it. So it's a really, really delicate, really important piece of history, right?
And it's now Kim Kardashian's ass.
And basically it's kicking off, and it's literally kicked off today, because loads of these historians, these fashion historians, have come out and said, this is disgusting. This is an important piece. This should be, this is in a museum. This shouldn't be touched. This needs to be like looked after and preserved. It was a moment in history. And she's wearing it at some event. She's not even sticking to the theme. She didn't, the irony of it all is she only wore it to arrive, and then she had another dress fabricated and made exactly the same that she wore. Huh. And this fashion historian is like, why could she not have just worn that anyway? Initially, I wanted to talk about stick to the fucking brief and don't think you're more important than the institution that is the Met Gala. Like, that's an issue generally. However, the fact that she wore something which is really culturally important...
I can't tell if that whole story was just code for stick to the fucking brief.
I think it basically was.
That's
like,
why we came.
So that's three creatives in here just being told, right?
It's just me telling you guys.
Just had an appraisal.
So
James.
So basically the upshot of that is be more creative like Jacquemus, or we'll replace you with Dali and stick to the fucking brief.
Let's cover off what we've got and what you're thinking, because the Cool Shit newsletter will be coming out on Friday. If you're listening to this on Friday, hello, happy Friday. How you doing? What do you think out of what you've got is going to make it in so far?
Well, I'm not sure I can put any of the Met Gala stuff in because it didn't sound like it was meant to go in because it was mainly.
I just wanted to talk.
Yeah, we're not getting things off our chest here. It's fine.
We did say that part of the reason that, that we do this now is to talk about the kind of cultural events that wouldn't necessarily make it into the newsletter.
Yeah.
So we had a lovely time, but that's not going in. I think the two that I bought are pretty nailed on for me. Because, as you know, I love plastic. as we've got to know each other there, and the Dali one, I'm happy to squeeze in the retail one because Matt's looking at me as if he'll kill me if I don't. So
Matt's nodding. You are putting it in.
Retail's going in.
So James, where do I go and find the Cool Shit newsletter?
Well, you always laugh at me for saying www. but it's just zacagency.com/coolshit.
ZAK.
ZAC,
not ZACK.
Not capital Z, small A K.
Yeah, don't do that.
No, never do that. Never do that.
Yeah, there.
There.
That's where you find it.
Okay, got you. All right then. Well, listen. Thank you very much for the heavy hitters episode, and James.
Well, and on behalf of all the heavy hitters, you're welcome.